News of the Times, Sinister Saturdays, The Assassin, Madame Vice. Welcome to News of the Times. In today's episode, it is 1891 Algiers, and French couple the Vices have been having some marital difficulties. Dashing engineer Felix Rock has moved to the area, and he and Madame Vice have begun a torrid, intimate affair. Monsieur Rock demands complete obeyance, insisting to some extent that Madame Vice be a slave and prove her love for him. His request falls short of her killing one of her children, although in a letter she sends, she agrees to do this if he demands it. But he is insistent that she kills her husband. This interesting case becomes an international sensation in its day, with a series of torrid love letters published and a highly dramatic ending for Monsieur Rock and Madame Vice. We take a look at the background, the crime, the capture, and the unsuspected ending to this convoluted saga in today's episode of Sinister Saturdays. We hope you enjoy the show. Jean Danilov, a Russian émigré, begins her life in Paris, where her mother has moved to in order to escape persecution in Russia. Her mother becomes a kept woman, and it is from this union that Jean Danilov is born. From the Pall Mall Gazette, 29th of May, 1891. The history of the accused is in many respects a remarkable one. Her mother was a Russian who, having been banished on account of her connection with the Nihilist movement, settled in Paris, where she became the mistress of a well-known man of rank and fashion, the prisoner being the offspring of the union. On the death of her mother, Madame Vice, who was then only 2 years old, passed under the care of her grandmother, a widow of large fortune, still young and handsome, and a confirmed gambler, by whom she was early introduced into the dissolute society of Monte Carlo and similar resorts. The child grew up in this unhealthy atmosphere, distinguished for her precocity and her intelligence and her charming manners. A young Italian officer blew out his brains because she refused to elope with him. Described as not necessarily beautiful, but very captivating, at the age of 17, she draws the attention of Monsieur Vice, an officer in the French artillery. With her shady background and her unknown antecedents, Monsieur Vice's family disapprove of his union, nor would his marriage to Jean Danilov be approved of in his military position. But Monsieur Vice is determined. He quits the army, marries Jean, and takes his new wife to Algiers, where he obtains work as a government official. From the Civil and Military Gazette, 27th of June, 1891. Jean Danilov's mother, one hears nothing about her father, was a Russian who had studied medicine in Paris. She afterwards opened a boarding house at Nice, where, to quote the words of the president of the court, Jean was brought up in the unwholesome atmosphere of watering places and cosmopolitan hotels. In 1884, when she was only 17, she made the acquaintance of a gentleman who took her to Paris, and after 6 months she returned to Nice, where, her mother being now dead, her grandmother took charge of her. This lady's authority does not seem to have curbed the adventurous spirit of Jean Danilov. At a ball, she made the acquaintance of a lieutenant of artillery, Monsieur Vice. He fell under her influence and wanted to marry her, but her antecedents not being considered satisfactory, neither his mother nor the Minister of War would consent to the union. But he was resolved that Jean would become Madame Vice. He left the army, entered the civil administration of Algeria, and married Jean Danilov. Two children were born, and down to that time, Madame Weiss's conduct as a married wife gave no grounds for scandal. Although she may not have been a devoted wife, she was an affectionate mother. Everything seems to be going well, although the social life is limited compared to France. Jean seems to be satisfied with her life. Everything changes with the arrival of handsome Felix Rock. The two quickly become enamoured of each other, and a torrid affair is begun. From the Civil and Military Gazette, 27th of June, 1891. The arrival of the young engineer, Monsieur Rock, at Ain Fezza changed things for the worst. He was a frequent visitor at the house, and Monsieur Weiss for a long time having no suspicion of evil. At length, to avoid scandal, Rock was forbidden to cross the threshold. Soon afterwards, he left for Spain. The correspondence seized by the police proved that Rock was stricken with the same form of madness that had seized upon Weiss. He wished to marry Jean. Not less anxious was she to marry Rock. For the man who had drawn her out of a slough and had given her name his name and had become thoroughly antipathetic to her. She made herself as disagreeable as possible to him in the hope that he would consent to a divorce by mutual agreement, but he declared that he could never be separated from her. Rock, who appears to have gone quite mad over this woman, proposed to shoot the obnoxious husband, but Jean would not consent to this. Then he urged her to poison him slowly and gave her much information concerning the action of various poisons. At first she had some qualms of conscience, but at length she wrote, "I swear that I will kill my husband to be wholly yours." Monsieur Weiss eventually seems to have understood the relationship between Monsieur Rock and his wife, and Monsieur Rock is banned from their home. Rock moves into a new position in Spain. Monsieur Weiss forgives his wife, or possibly does not understand the intensity of their relationship, and believes that its occurrence was part due to the remoteness of their location and the little there was to do for Jean there. He sends Jean to Marseille and to Nice for a type of holiday. It is here that the correspondence between Rock and Jean intensifies further. Interestingly, she is simultaneously writing love letters to her husband, George Weiss. From the Civil and Military Gazette, 27th of June, 1891. There are many who believe that Madame Weiss was so under the control of Rock's will that she lost her own. The much-debated question of hypnotism or suggestion in relationship to moral responsibility has been revived in her case. However, hysterical she may have been, in her letters show that she was no ordinary woman intellectually. Here is one of the things she wrote to Rock in February 1890. "I am haunted by sad and depressing ideas. What I am about to do is very frightful, and if I die, what will become of the poor little ones?" She and Rock had made a vow to poison themselves in the event of the plot being discovered. "I love them. My heart aches are the thought of not seeing them again, of becoming in their eyes an unworthy creature, the very recollection of whom will be forbidden to them. Say, Felix, I implore you, would it not be better to abandon our dreams of happiness? As for myself, I would find a refuge in maternity. I would love my children exclusively. One must be very cynical not to believe in the sincerity of this conflict between the natural woman and the perverted woman." In a postscript, she adds, "If, after all that, I have said to you you wish me to abandon my children for you, en bien, I will do it." Much more remarkable is another letter that she wrote to her husband soon after her arrival in Nice. She was accompanied by her children, and upon landing at Marseille, one of them was lost for a time. This is how she describes the feelings which the trouble at the thought of losing a child called up. "This sorrow was to a revelation I never understood until now, how much I was attracted and attached to my son. In spite of myself, the bonds between mother and children, husband and wife, become firmer every day, every hour. And while you accuse me of regarding you with horror, I feel that I was never bound to you so closely as I am now. So much do I feel it that I am prepared to make any sacrifice for you, George, even that of my life." Whilst in France, Jean purchases several packets of Fowler's Solution, an arsenic-based beauty powder meant to be placed in water and as a wash for ladies and their complexion. She returns to Algiers and begins to poison her husband slowly, as per Roch's instruction, in order to avoid detection. From the Civil and Military Gazette, 27th of June, 1891. In May, 1893, she came to Marseille, and it was there and at Nice, where her correspondence with Roch was renewed, that she undertook to poison her husband by means of Fowler's Solution. The drug, which is much used by women of a certain class in France to improve their complexions, is one that can be easily obtained, notwithstanding the severity of the regulations in this country with regard to the sale of poison. Madame Weiss returned to Algeria and soon afterwards began to put some arsenic into her husband's food and drink. Following Roch's instructions, she began with small doses and gradually increased them. Monsieur Weiss became very ill, but neither he nor his doctor could understand what the matter with him was. Jean knew, but she did not say. Lovingly caring for her ailing husband, friends of Monsieur Weiss are more suspicious, noticing the frequency of letters between herself and her known ex-lover, Felix Roch. From the Daily News in London, 28th of May, 1891, the Algerian husband poisoning case. In August of last year, Monsieur Weiss joined her in Nice and was soon seized with a disease which puzzled the doctors, who sent him to Vichy. On returning to the Riviera, he grew melancholy about her partiality for Roch, and soon after they went back to Algiers. In September, he became more ill than ever, his wife appearing to be a devoted nurse. It was noticed that when he went to dine away from home, he was better, and one of his friends, named Guéry, suspecting poison, opened one of her letters addressed to Roch at Madrid to see whether it relates to poison. It describes in style Weiss's symptoms, mentioning that the liquid was too weak to give a finishing dose, and begged Roch to send another phial of it, which she asked him to pack in a half a dozen pairs of baby socks. Guéry took the letter to the Procurator of the Republic, who ordered Madame Weiss's arrest, and when this was done, placed the letter before her and asked, "Did you write that?" She turned pale, but quickly regaining composure, and said, "Yes, Monsieur Roch is my lover and wants me to marry him. To get him to be patient, I wrote that I was poisoning Weiss." Other letters seized showed Roch to have prompted her. Madame Weiss is remanded, and the international drama commences. Monsieur Weiss is informed that he has been poisoned by his wife. Stunned, he refuses to recognize Madame Weiss as his wife, and furthermore refers to her as Miss Danilov, her maiden name. As international police sweep in, Rock is remanded in Spain by authorities for his role in promoting, pushing, aiding and abetting the attempted murder of Monsieur Weiss. True to his word, he commits suicide rather than spend time in prison. From the Civil and Military Gazette, 27th of June, 1891. When the plot was discovered, Rock was in Spain, where in his capacity as civil engineer, he was engaged upon some railway work near Madrid. After his arrest, he was left a few minutes alone in a guardroom where, seizing a rifle from the wall, he was able to blow out his brains before the return of the police sergeant. He knew how far his passion for that strange, not beautiful, but evidently captivating Russian blonde with the fatal blue eyes, Jean Danilov, had led him, and that the convict's dress was in store for him if he faced the ordeal of a trial. He preferred death to the alternative. Imprisoned as she awaits her trial, and aware that her lover Rock has committed suicide, Madame Weiss is quite clear to anyone who will listen that she will also commit suicide. Before that happens, she hopes and begs for forgiveness from Monsieur Weiss. She continues her pleas to him from her time in prison and throughout her trial. There is none forthcoming. From the Civil and Military Gazette, 27th of June, 1891, Madame Weiss hoped to the last that her husband would forgive her, but the arsenic had quite cured him of his infatuation. He turned as much of his back as he could to her in court and seemed as hard as stone while giving evidence. He spoke of her as Jean Danilov. Finally addressing the judge, he said, "I have not forgiven Jean Danilov, and I will never forgive her. Whether she be acquitted or convicted, I shall remain with my children, and all I wish is never to hear her spoken of again." The trial reaches the papers internationally. Madame Weiss, whilst in prison, has been a prolific writer, explaining her thoughts and emotions every step of the way. Her argument is that she was a slave to Rock and under his spell, a spell she fought hard to overcome, but ultimately lost. From the Pall Mall Gazette, 29th of May, 1891, Rock shot himself dead on being arrested, and the prisoner has also twice attempted to take her own life. Madame Weiss declares that she was throughout acting contrary to her own inclinations, being hopelessly mastered by her lover's irresistible strength of will. She writes, "For a whole year I strove against the power that was gradually mastering me, and no one will ever know how many times, after vowing that I would go through with the affair, I took down the phial of poison, only to put it back again. It was in vain, however, that I resisted." With the explosive trial commencing, Madame Weiss seems to have believed she would be released and found innocent as a victim of a persuasive Svengali-type mastermind, as she had portrayed Rock in her multitude of letters released to the press whilst she was in prison. Having taken a corrosive sublimate in one of her suicide attempts, she has lost all of her teeth and her voice as she sits hunched at the dock during her trial. From the Daily News in London, 29th of May, 1891, the Algerian poisoning case. The trial of Madame Weiss was begun today. Madame Weiss received the first letter she ever had from her lover about poison at the post office of Ain Fezza. She tore it up and threw it into the fireplace. The postmistress gathered the bits, placed them together, and became aware of the guilty plan. She betrayed her knowledge of it both to Madame Weiss and to D. Digeri. The latter, when he saw Madame Weiss so ill and the symptoms those produced by arsenic, watched for letters between Rock and the prisoner. Rock was passionately in love with her. He was a violent and willful man. She was in love with him, but fought, argued, and implored to be allowed to stay with Monsieur Weiss for the children's sake. The law would give him all power over them if she ran away, and her daughter would perhaps be injured. Eventually, Rock, when he last saw her, made her swear to poison Weiss. He strengthened her purpose by declaring that if she did not privy get rid of him, he would do so openly, although he were to be guillotined for it. According to the prisoner's narrative, it was her lover who imperatively demanded the disappearance of her husband. Various means of effecting this object were discussed between them both, but eventually poisoning was decided upon, and Madame Weiss proceeded to administer doses of Fowler's arsenical solution to her unsuspecting husband. As Monsieur Weiss happened at that time to be seriously indisposed, the plot would have been successful had it not been that a letter from Madame Weiss to her lover was intercepted. She wrote that she had no more poison left and requested that a further supply should be sent to her. Some letters of Madame Weiss's, which were brought into the prosecution, brought tears to the eyes of different jurors. The prisoner is greatly disfigured by the corrosive sublimate which she took and has lost her voice and teeth. Despite Madame Weiss's best attempt at portraying herself a type of victim under the powerful influence of Monsieur Rock, the jury find her guilty. She is sentenced to 20 years hard labour. She seems both surprised and then relieved upon hearing the verdict. From the Daily News, the 30th of May, 1891, the Algerian poisoning case, verdict and sentence. The Enfeza poisoning case is disposed of. Madame Weiss has been found guilty with extenuating circumstances, sentenced to 20 years hard labour in a penal colony and forbidden to inhabit France or Algeria for 10 years after the termination of her penalty. The Procurator of the Republic spoke very severely against the Doras and Fedoras who come to France, their minds filled with murderous and romantic notions, and who study life at the gambling tables. They brought moral and mental pestilence with them. He refused to believe that Madame Weiss might have remained an honourable wife and mother if Rock had not come upon the scene. He was always dreaming of being the heroine of some impossible romance and in quest of a hero. At first, her hero was Weiss. Then she began to construct a romance between Digeri, and he and she were beginning to consider themselves passionate lovers when the engineer came upon the scene. He was no doubt a scoundrel, and his mind also ran on murder, but he had not her astuteness nor the capacity through willful deception to deceive others. She was the kind of woman who, if she had not had a husband to poison, would have tried to blow up a czar. She wrote herself that she was always ready to commit a crime which was not only a breach of the law and only shrank back when a crime against nature was in question. Weiss might have been jealous and certainly had good cause, but from first to last, he was his wife's slave. When she was galvanating at Nice with Rock and the pair were haunting the Monaco tables, the husband was ordered by her to send her money. Although he were to sell the horses and piano, he obeyed her to the letter. She wrote to Rock that she loved him atrociously and had studied minutely how to poison without exciting suspicion. Her counsel represented her as the victim of her aunt's example. She was romantic, but what of that? If she had worked for a bookseller, she might have become the most famous woman of the century. So impressionable was she, and so eloquent and subtly delicate in rendering like impressions. Rock was her evil genius. She had ruined herself because of a great weakness and a grand virtue, her love for her children, whom she could not bring herself to leave. In the interest of those children, her counsel implored the jury to acquit her. Her moral solicitude and past suffering surely expiated the crime she had attempted. With the damning condemnation ringing in her ears, Madame Weiss is taken below to prepare for her lengthy prison sentence. With her two previously failed suicide attempts and aware that she has promised to kill herself, much care is taken to ensure her safety, but to no avail. In the small hours of the morning, Madame Weiss manages to release some small hidden grains of strychnine that have been sewn into the hem of her handkerchief. She suffers 20 minutes of agonizing death before expiring. From the Tewkesbury Register, the 6th of June, 1891, suicide of Madame Weiss. Madame Weiss, who was the other day at Oros in France, sentenced to 20 years hard labor for attempting to poison her husband, who was in the Algerian civil service, committed suicide in prison early the other morning. During her trial, she declared to her counsel that she was quite determined to put an end to her existence. "I shall," she said, "sadly find means to disappear, even if I have to dash my brains out against my prison wall." Her counsel did not attach undue importance to this threat, but he paid his client a visit in the evening and held hopes to her that the President of the Republic would commute her sentence to 5 years penal servitude. He urged her, therefore, not to attempt to commit suicide. The prisoner responded with a hysterical fit of laughing. The governor of the prison had then had her removed to another cell, where two warders stripped her to see that she had no poison or weapons concealed about her. Her own clothes were taken away, and she was given the prison dress. As a further precaution, her hair was taken down and combed. The two warders remain in Madame Weiss's cell all night, one watching while the other was asleep. At 3 o'clock in the morning, the prisoner asked for her pocket handkerchief, and the warder handed it to her. A quarter of an hour later, Madame Weiss asked for a glass of water, which she drank off. She had swallowed a pinch of strychnine, wrapped in a minute scrap of paper, which had been concealed in her handkerchief. It is thought that she asked for the water to wash down the poison. At 3:30, Madame Weiss was seized with violent convulsions, and the warders called the chief jailer. When he entered the cell a few moments afterwards, Madame Weiss was in an alarming condition. The governor of the prison sent for the doctor, who, on his arrival at 4 o'clock, administered an emetic, but it was too late. It was noticed during her trial on Friday that Madame Weiss tried to tear open the hem of her handkerchief. It is supposed that she wanted to poison herself in court after her condemnation. The suicide of Madame Weiss has been all the absorbing topics of conversation in Paris. Every journal has an article on the subject. Only a few inquire how it was that she was left the means of putting an end to her life. An inquiry will be made into that matter. The governor of the prison affirmed that he had Madame Weiss's pocket handkerchief taken from her after she returned from court. That being the case, it is suggested that the poison was concealed in the handkerchief she had in her pocket the first day's hearings of the case, and which, it is said, she gave to a fellow prisoner who returned it to her after she had been searched by the two women warders. The post-mortem examination revealed nothing that was not known, except that Madame Weiss died with a ring on her finger given to her by Monsieur Rock. This jewel, which had been given into the keeping of a friend, was returned to Madame Weiss after her condemnation, and has now been taken off the body and given to her grandmother, Madame Daniloff, together with her hair, which was cut short. Madame Daniloff, who is now old, is ill at a small hotel in Olin. The news of her granddaughter's suicide was kept from her by her friends till the police arrive to communicate the intelligence to her. She said, "Her death consoles me for her condemnation, which prostrated me. My poor Jean will suffer no more. As for the children, they will be provided for by their father, who is an honourable." Monsieur Weiss, on being informed of the terrible event, merely shrugged his shoulders and expressed regret that the act of self-destruction was not committed before the trial. He was asked whether he had any directions concerning his wife's remains, to which he replied that living or dead, the woman Jean Daniloff could no more be a concern of his. After her trial, Madame Weiss wrote a letter which has been found in her cell since her suicide. Its contents are not known, as it is closed and bears the instruction to be given to my son when he's 15 years old. He took a letter which his wife had written to him an hour before her death, but he declined to accept the charge of another addressed to my son when he's 15 years of age, adding that the boy ought never to know of his mother's crime, and that it would be more fitting to bury the letter with the writer. The police are inquiring for two women friends of Madame Weiss who came to Oran, thinking she might be acquitted. It is thought that they may be able to give some information as to the manner in which Madame Weiss procured and concealed the poison. According to the telegrams received here, the suicide of Madame Weiss has created an extraordinary sensation at Oran, where the wildest reports are being circulated concerning it. One report even says that Monsieur Rock is not dead, and that by bribery he obtained the certificate of death, which was sent by the Spanish authorities to the French judicial authorities. The funeral of Madame Weiss, which took place at the Oran Cemetery, was witnessed by a very large concourse of people. Madame Daniloff was present. A great many ladies and women of all classes of society followed in the procession. The Catholic bishop refused to allow any religious ceremony over the remains. The burial service was read by a Protestant minister. It is said that as there was no hearse and no undertaker's men at the hospital from which the funeral procession started, four men who refused payment volunteered to carry the coffin to the cemetery. That concludes this episode of Sinister Saturdays, The Assassin, Madame Weiss. We very much hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy this show, we would be grateful if you could like or subscribe to our channel. We upload 5 days a week. Mondays are murderous as we delve into the dark side of Regency and Victorian crime. Wednesdays are wicked, where we pull together stories with a similar theme, such as Doctors of Death. Fridays are frightful, where we look at crimes in a location, such as stories from the stage, to murder and scandal in the aristocracy. Saturdays is Serial Killer Saturdays, where we investigate serial killer stories from the past. On the last Sunday of the month, we offer a 2-hour compilation of stories based around a theme. If you like this channel, you may be interested in our sister channel, Chronicle of the Times, where we offer a lighter side of Victorian and Edwardian news stories, as well as a weekly podcast of stories from authors of the day, such as Dickens, Collins, Benson, and Conan Doyle. Thank you again for watching and listening. This has been News of the Times, and I am Robin Coles.